Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and welcome to episode 11 of Radio Harambe, the official podcast of JamboEveryone.com and the unofficial podcast of Disney's Animal Kingdom and Walt Disney World. Before we get started, let me take a second to plug our travel partner, Jennifer Green from Destinations in Florida. Jen is an expert on booking Disney vacations and can help with every aspect of the planning process. But even more important, it costs you nothing extra to use her service, and every booking means Jen makes a donation to our conservation partners who are working tirelessly to save endangered species. Go to JamboEveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon, or you can email Jen directly at JenniferG@DestinationsInFlorida.com. On this show, we will talk about news from the Animal Kingdom and the rest of Walt Disney World. And then in our feature section, we're going to go into the archives and discuss the backstory and history of our studio's hometown, Harambe. I am Dave McBride, coming to you from the Radio Harambe studios. And joining me from somewhere in the world, a man who speaks 9 languages, including fluent Na'vi, it's Safari Mike. Safari Mike, how are you?
Jumbo Dave, how are you?
Very well, very well. And where are you calling us today? I assume it's not Pandora.
It is not Pandora. I'm in Bhutan.
Okay. I don't know where that is. It sounds Asian.
It's very good.
Yes.
Not far from China. We're studying the Temex tragopan, which is a small pheasant-like bird in the mountains of the Himalayas. And they're beautiful birds, and they have these gorgeous blue bibs on the males, and we're studying the mating habits of Temex.
When you first said that, it sounded like a cryptozoological thing, you know, something that doesn't really exist.
They kind of look like pheasants, actually.
Oh, cool.
They're related to pheasants.
And where is it again?
Bhutan.
Okay. You're going to run into Joe Rohde out there. Oh, no, he's in Mongolia, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm not that close to him. No.
Yeah, you're very far away, actually. All right, let's start with the local news, the news from in and around the Animal Kingdom. The first story is kind of a report. We're still trying to get Disney confirmation on this, though. This is the kind of thing that Disney tends not to talk about. We don't know why. But it seems that there is a herd of springboks that are being added to the Animal Kingdom Lodge Savannah. For those of you unfamiliar, springboks are, how would you describe them, Mike?
Well, they're antelope. They're very similar to Thompson's gazelles, which I'm sure a lot of people are more familiar with.
Right.
They're very closely related to them, and they look a lot like them.
And in earlier this year, they were added to Kilimanjaro Safari.
Correct. Correct.
So now it seems, according to sources, let's put it that way, right, that they're bringing them over to the Animal Kingdom Lodge. I'm only saying sources because Disney hasn't written anything specific, and I haven't been there yet. So, and neither of you, so we haven't actually laid eyes on these springboks just yet.
Nor have I seen pictures, but I know of several people who have spotted them there.
And have been told about them.
Yeah, they were told about them on a sunrise safari. They were supposed to be released to the Animal Kingdom Lodge come Monday, but you might not see them right away as they're being acclimated to the savannah and the other animals there. And I'm not exactly sure what savannah they're going to be on.
Right. My recollection of them being added to, because we were at the Animal Kingdom, you know, only weeks after they were added to Kilimanjaro Safari, and they were still, I guess they were still sort of in the acclimation process there, because I remember when they were there, they were kind of off by themselves, and there was a truck, you know, of an animal care specialist that seemed to be there all the time, sort of observing their behavior during the acclimation process. I guess that's something they would have to do here as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so fascinated by that process ever since the zebra thing. You know, it's
sort of difficult. These guys are much less difficult than zebra.
Yeah, but still, you know, it opens your eyes to the fact that there's more to this than just, you know, bringing some animals to a grasslands. It's not that simple. Our next story is staying in the general Africa vicinity. We talked last week about some construction walls going up in Harambe. What we feel is a much greater project than just simply the Festival of the Lion King Theater being built. We don't have any more information regarding what the project is. However, if you go to jomboeveryone.com and you look at the blog, you click through to the blog, you will see that just a couple days ago, we posted some photographs of these walls. And what we talked about last week are confirmed is exactly what we have there. And basically, Mike, to me, the one that sticks out the most is the walls around the what you would call the, if you're looking at the Tusker House, the left side of the Tusker House.
Right.
Leading all the way up to the center square, center courtyard area.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one, I think that's the one section where, I mean, it could just be the movement of the Dawa Bar, but I think that one piece of wall there is the one that is, has everybody scratching their heads. You know, that's the part that's obviously not the theater.
Right, but it, yeah, right, it's not the theater. It can't be the theater.
Right.
Who knows what it is?
And we don't know. You know, obviously, you know, you'll be down there soon, and I'll be down there soon after. So hopefully in the coming weeks, we'll have some idea at least. Mm-hmm. I've been known to peek over things in the past and risk the risk the discipline of the local cast member. So I'll promise I'll do that again. See what I come up with. But you know, it's we just don't know. We you and I both thought that might be a merchandise area. But that is that is definitely there, and there is a lot more work going on in Harambe than what we first thought.
It's huge. Yeah. You can actually start to see some of the walls of the theater itself behind the Dawa.
Yeah, a lot of the walls.
Yeah, I mean, you can pretty much see what it's going to sort of look like. It's just huge.
The one thing that strikes me, and maybe it's a depth thing from the pictures, and it might be different when I go there. I expected it to be set a little further back than it is.
Yeah, so did I. I expected it to be farther back, but it's right on top of Harambe.
It's right on top of it. So it's going to have to have, it's going to have a theming a lot more than just a theater. You know, it's going to have an exterior that's going to require some, you know, some working with, you know, some synergy,
like the rest of Harambe.
Exactly. Because
at least
it's
a theme that we'll get to in a few minutes.
Because it looks like it's going to be the biggest thing in the property in that area. Certainly the biggest building.
Yeah, it does. You don't want it to dwarf everything else and sort of, tower over it and you know, make the rest of Harambe minuscule in comparison. But
right.
It does look like it's going to be much bigger.
Exciting times in Harambe. And like I said, we're going to get more to that later. And I say exciting because you never know. So let's not, I'm not going to assume it's going to be great. You never know.
Well, I'm excited by it. I mean, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a positive outlook on it. Let me put it that way. Especially if they're going to add more food options and stores and things like that.
Right.
And let's be honest, Lion King always belonged in Harambe anyway, as opposed to Camp Minimiki, so.
All I can say is I hope Joe Rohde comes home from Mongolia sooner rather than later. When it comes to this project, that's kind of my thought pattern here.
Fair enough.
Okay, another one. In what is perhaps, to me at least, the single best limited time magic offering, and folks, if you haven't listened to this show, we've only been on 10 episodes. We've probably spent a good 5 or 6 of them talking about how terrible we think this promotion is.
And the news section, sure.
Yeah, I mean, we've done that a lot, and a lot of people have. And I know it's a source of contention for a lot of people. But what to me seems like a really great offering, they're doing a promotional event next week. That's offering exclusive behind the scenes tours of Expedition Everest. Now, here's the official description from Disney. Each morning from October 7th, which is today when we record, so we only have a couple days here, October 7th through the 11th, a group of lucky guests, and they're not really lucky, we'll get to that in a second, will venture inside the Tibetan-style stone structure at the foot of the towering Mount Everest replica, explore a museum dedicated to the study of the Yeti, the mysterious snow monster said to inhabit the Himalayas, and visit other areas of the attraction. And during each walking tour, participants will hear inside stories from the Walt Disney Imagineers who brought the Expedition Everest Legend of the Forbidden Mountain attraction to life. The only one tour per day begins at 8 a.m. There's only 10 guests in each group. And the reason why I say they're not lucky, it's because they're not being plucked out of anything, right? They have to sign up for these.
Correct.
And this got under a lot of people's radar.
What was under mine? I missed it.
Yep.
I completely missed it. It was only open for a few hours on one day to sign up. I think it was only a few hours on one day.
I agree. I mean, there's only 10 guests, one a day for 4 days. There's only 40 or 50 people getting this.
Yeah, and I, the few hours that it was up for, I wasn't, you know, at a computer, I was working, whatever. And, you know, I saw it on Twitter like a few hours after it already closed.
Yeah, and you know, when I say the single best, I think it's because it's the single best idea. But
yeah,
I think only limiting it to 40 or 50 people who is not really a great idea.
Well, I mean, the problem you have, though, is that you're going to have an Imagineer do it, right? I mean, theoretically, these guys...
We think so, yeah.
That's what I thought it was. I mean, these guys, respectfully, are probably rather busy and have other things they could be doing other than tours like
right.
this.
Right.
Having said that, though, I mean, they do Dine with an Imagineer, right?
Sure.
This is something that maybe they should offer, you know, maybe a couple of times a month, for, you know, as opposed to just like a limited time magic kind of thing. But they could have definitely opened it for more people than they actually did.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's only going to be an hour long, they could have done a couple of tours inside that hour. You know, the logistics of it could be done. Depends on what they're doing. There's nothing in here that says that it's a behind the scenes thing. I call it that because I see it written that in a few different places. But the actual official description only refers to something like other areas.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's being said by some people to be behind the scenes, but I haven't heard anybody write anything on it yet. And I doubt we're gonna, because there's only 40 or 50 people who've done it, though. I imagine there's going to be some prominent podcasters or, you know, website owners who may just so happen to have gotten into that window of phone calls. I expect to hear something, but it seems pretty cool. I mean, I wish I was doing it.
Oh, me too. I would have loved it. I'm going to be down in Florida for that week.
Yeah, you got unlucky.
I would have loved to have done it.
Listen, man, your Twitter folks got to come up with the goods better than this. I don't want to call them out here, but
it's not their fault. I was at work. I mean, I wasn't able to look at anything anyway.
All right. Speaking of your Twitter folks,
yes,
our final, and this is limited time magic.
Yeah, it certainly is. Limited magic, anyway. But go ahead.
First ever official, and mm-hmm. I just deemed it official, Safari Mike meet and greet.
I prefer to think of it as a Jumbo Everyone meetup, but go ahead.
I like the Safari Mike meet and greet much better. And I want to see a queue line of people waiting for autographs and pictures.
Well, listen, the Animal Kingdom could use some more Fast Pass pluses. So
there you go. So give us the details or whatever details you want to, you know, you're going to put on. I'm sure you've put them up on Twitter and stuff already. I mean, what's the plan here?
No, I mean, actually, I haven't really put it up too much. It was our travel partner, Jen, from Destinations in Florida, is going to be down there along with me. So we decided we wanted to meet up somewhere, and Animal Kingdom on Saturday night is going to be open till 8 o'clock at night, meaning I will be there after dark, which I'm very much looking forward to, take some pictures. So I planned on being there, and she wanted to meet up there. So what we've decided to do is that we will be at Dinoland at 6 o'clock. And whoever wants to come meet us will maybe take a spin on Triceratops spin. So I'll do a Jumbo Everyone Triceratops spin meetup at 6 o'clock on Saturday, October 12th. I'll be there for a little bit and we'll go for a ride and maybe, you know, say hello and off you go. So that's
nice.
It.
Nice. Well, that's it for the, I mean, will you, I'm sure if you follow Mike on Twitter, he's one of the Twitter stars of the Disney universe. He's at jomboeveryone.com. You could follow him there. And I'm sure there'll be more about this special limited time magic meet and greet in the coming days. So that's all for the local news. We're going to take a short break. Be back with the world news in just a second on Radio Harambe.
Come on, gang. Let's take it home.
If you're like me, you're an Animal Kingdom fan who is just a bit tired of listening to so-called Disney experts who criticize our beloved park for being a, quote, half-day park. Well, it's time to put your frustrations into action by going to the Jumbo Everyone store at Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone and picking up one of our exclusive new Not a Half-Day Park t-shirts. They look great, and we will donate 50% of the profits to our conservation partners. The rest of it will go to helping keep Radio Harambe on the air and JomboEveryone.com on the web. Wear it the next time you visit the parks, or even better, the next time you attend a Disney fan meetup. Go to Zazzle.com/JomboEveryone today and wear your Animal Kingdom pride for all to see. Welcome back to Radio Harambe. It is time for the world news, and with that, coming to us from someplace whose name I can't really pronounce very well, is Safari Mike. How are you?
I'm very good. It's Bhutan.
Bhutan. What do we have today?
All right. Bhutan. Well, first we're going to start off with a story about My Magic Plus, our favorite topic over the last couple of episodes.
Speaking, before we go to that,
yes,
I got my magic bands today. So for those of you who were listening to the last show and we're wondering whether or not I'd go to the dark side, I have.
Have you made your Fast Pass Pluses yet?
I've made a couple. Okay. I'm actually really more interested in the idea of the magic band than I am at anything else, because I figured this is something that is coming down the line. We're all going to need to use it, so I might as well check it out and get familiar with it.
It's funny how you said that it's coming down the line and we have to get used to it, because my story is... segue. My story is the testing phase is apparently going to be over November 30th, which, according to several sites, means My Magic Plus will be available for everyone starting December 1st. This has not been confirmed by Disney, but that is what everybody is saying, and I guess we're going to find out.
Either that or they're going to go away.
Yeah,
period to redo something and then test again, maybe.
Clearly, that I think that's in the option, but there are several websites that are reporting that the plan is December 1st will be, so if you're staying at the Hilton in, Orlando somewhere and you're going to go to Disney, you can get My Magic Bands and all that kind of stuff starting December 1st.
All right. Well, I got mine.
All right.
I got mine, and I made a couple of things. There's a few things I'm still waiting to hear about, because I'm not clear on some logistics on things. Mm-hmm. We talked about it. I'm still a little unclear about what some of the shows and fireworks things really mean. Is it worth it?
I can't imagine fireworks is worth it, but I mean, I don't know.
Well, let me put it to you this way. I'm going to show up. I'm going to enter the park. I'm an annual pass holder, so tickets are not an issue. I'm going to go to the park on a night. And so I'm going to get there at dinner time. So I'm not going to have time to do three attractions. I'm just not going to do that. That's just not how I'm not going to run around the place to get in attractions. I'll probably get to Epcot, eat some dinner, have some food and wine festival, fun activities, and then maybe go on, stay in the World Showcase. It's only a couple hours, So I was wondering whether, I might grab one fast pass to one attraction that I might go on, maybe the Maelstrom or something like that. But a thought came to my mind, but maybe I would test out the Illuminations thing. If it gave us maybe a seat or a good area to watch from, it might be something you know, since I'm not using it, it might be something I would need. The other one I'm kind of curious about is Fantasmic.
Yeah, that I could see more. I mean, for the Luminations, it's such easy, so easy to see it. I mean, it seems like a waste to me. But
I know, but if you're not going to use the reservation and it has a non-obstructed view somewhere, a nice view, like in one of those, you know, like in one of the places by the Rose and Crown or, you know, something, then it might be worth it. You know, I don't know. That's what I got to find out, you see?
Yeah, you're in charge of finding that out because I didn't care.
No, I don't want to make the reservation until somebody tells me it's worth it.
Well, I can't say that because I didn't make any reservations for shows, parades, fireworks.
Yeah, I've only done a few. I really did it. I really was talked into it more for the I wanted to see what the bands were like and how that system's going to work and to be able to use the app with some of the, you know, to be able to integrate all the dining reservations and stuff like that. More so than the attractions, because quite honestly, I don't spend a lot of time on e-ticket attractions. I really don't. There's only a few that I really ever go on anymore. I mean, I go on different ones every time I'm there, but I go often enough where I really don't like standing in line. And, you know, I mean, even some of them, the fast pass lines just aren't great, you know, and so I don't, that's not really an issue for me, but I want to try it, see what it's like.
It's going to be interesting to see once it goes full blown, theoretically in December or whenever it is.
Well, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if, because right now you can get FastPass pluses for anything.
I mean, absolutely.
Anytime you want to. It doesn't matter. Whatever you want, when you want.
Pretty
but
much.
But come December 1st, or probably not December 1st, but once it's really integrated, it'll be interesting to see how quickly the Soarin' ones. I mean, are you going to have to book Soarin' 60 days out when you first can? It'll be interesting to see.
I mean, that's, to be honest, that's really what I used it for. I used it for because the e-ticket attractions that I go on, I generally only go, like, for instance, in the Animal Kingdom, I'm only going on the safaris in the morning because it's just not as good in the afternoon because of the nature of the animals. I usually, so I'm, you know, I don't need a FastPass Plus reservation for that because I go there first.
Right.
So there's that. So I used it for Soarin' and for Toy Story Mania and the ones that are particularly difficult. And then, you know, the last couple I didn't even know. If it gets to the point where you can't do that, especially if the average customer can't do that a month in advance because it gets booked up like Le Cellier or something like that, well, then it just becomes another pain in the butt when it comes, you know. Instead of being disappointed by the line then, you're disappointed now with your reservation.
Yeah, it could be. We'll see.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to be answered here, but... Okay.
And maybe we'll start getting answered around the new year.
Yeah, it seems that way.
See. It also seems kind of strange that they would bust it out full-blown right before Christmas. You would think they would wait till after the major Christmas season, like wait till things die down and then roll it out full force February 1st.
This is why I'm not so sure that's what's happened.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I'm not sure, but some sites are reporting it.
Okay. All right, so we'll see.
Okay.
What else we got?
All right, next one. Let's go to the Resort Loop monorail. Apparently, it is going down from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for the next couple of weeks or so as they are doing some serious maintenance on the Resort Loop section. It's not affecting the loop that goes from Magic Kingdom to straight to TTC, nor is it affecting the monorail that goes back and forth from TTC to Epcot. It is just the Resort Loop monorail. However... I think this is indicative of a problem that we have been seeing with the monorails over the last couple of years. I can tell you every time I've been there the last couple of times, it seems like every time I've gone to the Magic Kingdom, either when I get there in the morning or when I'm trying to get out of there, or there's always some monorail line is shut down and, you know, they're putting you on ferries or whatnot. I just think the monorail is kind of getting long in the tooth and Disney's not sure what to do with this.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, it does seem like there's gonna have to be a change, some way, shape, or form coming down the line.
Yeah, the problem I've seen, and I've saw this on Twitter a little bit, like people. So if you have hotel reservations for, I don't know, Polynesian, let's say, within this next week, people are ticked off that, you know, that you get on the, go to the Polynesian because it's on the monorail line.
Totally.
I mean, the part of the, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the Polynesian is extraordinarily expensive. And a big part of that is the fact you just hop on a monorail and go to Epcot or go to the Magic Kingdom or whatnot. And the fact that they're saying, oh, well, we have buses for you, it's not cutting it.
Absolutely right.
To people who are spending $500 a night.
Absolutely 100% right. I mean, that's why I think, you know, a lot of people have been saying, well, this could be the beginning of the, well, not a lot of people, but you hear some folks saying now, this could be the beginning of the end of the monorail. I don't know about that. I mean, you know, once you start devaluing rooms in places that you're investing lots of money in rooms right now, I think the opposite's going to have to be true. I think they're going to have to, there may be a time where they're going to have to rebuild some of these things.
I think what they have to do is, that's exactly right. They're going to have to, at some point here in the not too distant future, just bite the bullet.
And deal with a year off. Yep.
Or whatever, 6 months, whatever it is. Right. Just tell people, listen, I'm sorry, but, you know, when they're booking it. I mean, they've sprung this on people. I mean, you could have booked the Polynesian 6 months ago or whatever, and you're just finding out about it now. You know, I'm going next week, and all of a sudden I'm not going on the monorail. What the hell is this about?
Right.
I saw some people on Twitter, like, trying to go to different hotels to make, you know, save money and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
I know I would. I would be annoyed.
Totally.
If that happened to me.
When you consider the price difference between, I mean, you know this better than anybody, between something like the Polynesian and the Wilderness Lodge, if you're taking the same, you're taking the same transportation.
Yeah.
Why would you go to the Polynesian unless you're just a tiki fan that needs the Polynesian, which I understand. The Polynesian has its fans, deservedly so. But you're not getting the monorail loop is what's there. And so that's why I'm saying a lot of people who are fearing for the future of the monorail here don't, because they're investing a lot of money in the monorail loop rooms right now. And they know what that means.
They're going to have to,
like you said, bite the bullet and make it happen.
I think they have to, yeah.
Yeah, totally. I'd be stunned if it were any other way. Unless they just wait until all the rooms are sold in the Grand Floridian, all the rooms are sold at the Polynesian for the amount of money they're going to, and then voila, away goes the monorail. I guess that's the real cynic's viewpoint.
Yeah, but they still charge people a lot of money to go to the Polynesian.
Sure,
and the
they
Grand
do.
And,
yep.
You know, not DVC people, but others.
Yep, sure
and
they do.
I don't know if they'll be able to do that without the monorail there.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
What else is on there?
All right, two more stories. Mm-hmm. This one, come Halloween, October 31st. Mm-hmm. I'm sure many of our listeners remember the time when cancellation fees, if you cancel a restaurant reservation within 24 hours of certain restaurants like Chico, Ohana, some of the bigger ones, Le Cellier, you got charged $10 a person
for
canceling. Well, that's going to be expanded to all sit-down restaurants.
Amazing.
Even crappy ones like Liberty Tree Tavern and Tony's Town Square come amazing. October 31st. So, I have trouble with this. I mean, to be honest, I was never one that canceled my reservations. I make them. I mean, maybe a couple weeks ahead of time, I might tweak them. One time, we called an audible on that day and canceled a reservation, switched it up on one occasion. And all the many times I've gone, so this is not really an issue for me. But what if a couple is down there? You know, it's just you and your wife, let's say, and you know you woke up that morning and you're sick. I hope Disney is a little flexible when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Well, do they have the parameters behind the cancellation? You need what's the notice you need to give?
It was 24 hours before.
Yeah, it can't be that for everything. They're living in la la land if they think that's going to fly. You know, they're trying to do is to encourage people to not make dinner reservations and to go someplace else, that's what they're going to come up with. Because you, just like you're saying, I mean, you get up, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and your kid throws up in the tangled toilets. What are you going to do? You're going to pay $10 a kid because you can't get your Liberty Tree Tavern reservations? I mean,
you should be going to Liberty Tree Tavern anyway.
Well, you know what I'm saying. It's lunacy. It's ridiculous to even think such a policy should be thought about, you know, unless they're going to change it to something like, you know, 2 hours.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, that's fine.
Even then, I don't think it's reasonable, but whatever,
yeah.
You know, but it is what it is.
It is what it is.
I will say this. I do know personally that people take advantage of the situation.
Oh, absolutely.
So I do understand that we're back into this thing where we're overcompensating for some people who take advantage of the situation. Here's the thing. For reasons passing understanding, Disney doesn't seem to have a way, at least they didn't, till maybe recently things have changed with the new app. For some reason, the same reservation and the same person could make a reservation for two different spots on the same day. Like, how is...
You can't really do that.
You can't do that now? Okay, so they've fixed that. All right.
There is a time period. Like, you can make it like 3 or 4 hours away from each other. You can't do Sanaa at 5 and Boma at 5:15.
You used to be able just to put in anything you want. Make a reservation for anything.
Correct. Right, correct. But if you have more than one person in your party, you can, you know, you could, I mean, you know, there's nothing to prevent me from making a reservation and you, if we were together, making a reservation with 5 guests somewhere else and, you know, my wife making a reservation somewhere else with 6 guests or whatever.
Right.
The notice that they're putting on is the day before. If you get a 10-person per penalty for failing to provide day before notice of reservation cancellation.
Lunacy.
So to avoid the penalty, you must cancel the day before by 11:59 p.m. So if you have 6 o'clock reservations at Boma for dinner or noon reservations for whatever, pick a restaurant, you got to cancel them by midnight the night before, the day before.
Right. Yep.
And they actually even have a hotline, WDW cancel, CNCL.
Nice.
Just call them up and say, I'm canceling.
Unbelievable. Okay. Well, I hope nobody's kids get sick when they have a dinner reservation. It's going to cost them $10, so that's nice of them. What's next?
I know sometimes I get criticized for being a little too critical.
Honest?
Honest of Disney. So for those people who don't like that, they might want to turn off the show for the next 5 minutes because I'm enraged.
You could put me in this camp, too. I don't even know what you're talking about, but I've been in the same boat.
So Disney has decided, as we all know, Frozen is the movie coming out in November, loosely based on a Hans Christian Andersen story, and they have decided, they announced today, that the Norwegian Pavilion is going to get inundated with Frozen characters. There's going to be a meet and greet of the Frozen princesses, or the princess and the bad guy, or whatever, I don't care. But worse yet, and that's going to be somewhere in the pavilion, they haven't really said where, but worse yet is they have closed, and apparently they've already closed, the beloved Viking Museum in the Stave Church. And we're going to replace it with an exhibit on how the Norwegian culture influenced the filmmakers of Frozen. So you can expect a lot of, you know, Frozen nonsense replacing King Olaf and Eric the Red and the awesome Viking Museum that they had at the Stave Church. I think this is atrocious, and this is terrible, terrible. And to top it all off, when I saw that this morning on the Disney Parks blog, I decided to put a comment in. It was not anything offensive or mean-spirited or anything. I simply said this. I don't think this is really should go in World Showcase. The Viking Museum is more in tune. I'm paraphrasing. I don't recall exactly what I wrote. Is more of what World Showcase should be, a showing of the cultures around of the different countries of the pavilion. It really is not geared or should be a place for just simple meet and greets. Somehow, some way, that comment did not, you know, I sent my comment that says it's awaiting moderation, and it didn't make moderation. I guess that was too offensive.
Well, I'll be darned.
You know, instead, they had plenty of room for I can't wait to see Frozen. Ooh, this exhibit sounds so cool. Ooh, I want to meet Anna, Princess Anna, and all that kind of stuff. That you'll see ad nauseum on the Disney Parks blog. But anybody who even states, and respectfully, you know, there was no disrespect, no nothing. Just kind of like, I don't think this is what World Showcase should be. You can forget it. That's not going to be on the Disney Parks blog. So if you have any type of opinion that has even a smidge of a criticism, they're not going to. They'll be damned if they put it on their website. Okay. And I am so annoyed by this. I hope, personally, I know you want to say something, Dave.
No, go ahead.
I hope Frozen bombs I hope it's embarrassingly bad. I hope four people go see it in the first week so that the Vikings come back so they can discreetly get rid of the nonsense of Frozen and bring back the Vikings. I would have enjoyed this movie, but now I can't stand it. I hope it bombs.
Well, let's take all that piece by piece. Number one, the Disney Parks blog is essentially a clearinghouse for press releases that have been shortened into cool talk. It is essentially worthless to anybody who wants to read about Disney. There's just no there's no reason to look at it. They'll just give you information you've had 2 weeks already.
That's not entirely true. This Frozen thing was, I mean, they will announce things that are news.
Yes, they will announce things that are news, but it's just, but you could find it on, you could find the same news on a million other sources.
Yeah, but a half hour later, sure.
Yeah, and you'll find somebody on there who will give you a little more information than they're going to give you on the Disney Parks blog. That's
true.
That's just what that is.
And I was able to get more information from, you know, some of the social media people from Disney. From Disney themselves, because if you read the blog post itself, it doesn't really tell you where the it doesn't make clear where the exhibit's going to be and where the meet and greet's going to be. But I have since found out that the meet and greet is not going to be in the Stay of Church, but the new exhibit will be. So they are definitely getting rid of the Vikings. But go ahead.
Okay. So, but and when you say something like. It's not been made clear every time we quote a Disney Parks blog thing, which we do a bit because it is the official source, you know, comes from the official source. So we like to use that when we can. We always say, it seems like we always end it with it, something that to the effect of it has not been made clear. That's just what they do there. Okay. The second thing. I can pretty much guarantee you that once the Vikings leave, they will never come back.
Right.
Okay, so you could say goodbye to the Vikings. And so if Frozen is gone, it'll be replaced by some kind of other thing. It's now going to be an area that will be used for similar purposes.
To be honest, I think it'll just be Frozen. Even if Frozen...
It'll stay that way.
Yeah, Frozen's not going to bomb to the point where it's like an embarrassment, you know, to the level of the Lone Ranger. But I mean, let's be honest. They kept that Prince Caspian thing at the Hollywood studios for how many years?
Right. Nobody went to see that.
Nobody saw that. Stupid.
Totally. That's exactly what I'm saying. So it's not coming back. It's the cultural element that is in Epcot at the Norway Pavilion has been lost. That is now gone. The great thing about Norway, the Norway Pavilion. As opposed to a couple other ones, is that it really was one of the great immersive experiences in World Showcase, which some other pavilions, and I know people don't like to hear this, aren't as much so. But the Norway one is from bow to stern, you know, was a great immersive experience, and now we're kind of eroding away at it, which was only a matter of time before something like that happened. I share your opinion on this from your Disney Parks blog rant, because I've tried the same thing once or twice, and lo and behold, my politely worded pseudo-criticisms seem to never find their way on, but it always seems to be everybody who loves the whole idea, boy, this is going to be great, or may have a question like, are you sure it's going to have these characters and not Mickey Mouse? And then they'll write back and they'll say, no, Mickey Mouse, you know, that kind of thing. It is, it's a waste of time. I mean, and it's what they want. They're trying to promote everything is happy and that's fine. Cause it's their official blog. It's annoying cause you'd like to have a forum where you can express things that you're not 100% in a proper way. And in a polite way, you'd like to be able to express things that you wish weren't going to happen at Disney so that you can maybe do your 2 cents worth to stop something that you don't like. Because nobody's going to walk into this and say, boy, that's a great idea. Let's put Frozen in the Norway Pavilion. No one's going to say that.
Yeah, no one would have a brain. I mean,
nobody.
I should say that. I'm sure there are like little girls in the who will be thrilled to see Frozen. And that's fine. That's fine.
It could go anywhere and get that reaction.
That's a time and place for that. They have a Belle character breakfast right there. Take Belle out. She's already all over New Fantasyland and put the Frozen princess there.
Right.
It's now the Frozen princess. I think it's Anna. I don't know. Who cares? The Anna character breakfast. There you go. Problem solved. But nope, they have to take away my Vikings.
Mike, this is
ridiculous. and they should just get rid of the stupid comment section. Just get rid of it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's embarrassing. That's how ridiculous it is.
Mike, this is why my palms sweat when we talk about changes in Harambe. I'll be honest with you. This is why. Because things always start this way. I don't want to say always. I don't want to sound negative. I know people hate when I do that, and I do apologize for it. But I have yet to my favorite misused word in the Disney lexicon is plussing. Imagineers are going to plus something. There are very few things in my memory that I have ever seen them plus and actually make it better than what it was when it began. It may make it different. It may change it. It oftentimes makes it worse. And it usually makes it coincide with some sort of marketing campaign. But plussing is not what's going to happen here. And when we start talking about Harambe, you know, Norway was another Joe Rohde project. And that's the reason why it looks like it is, you know, like how great as it is. And it's only a matter of time. I just fear that it's only a matter of time before these little synergy tentacles start spreading all over the place.
Well, you know, if Frozen's a popular boat ride, the Maelstrom will be turned into Princess Anna's boat dream or
exactly,
whatever.
Exactly what I'm saying.
But I mean, there are examples of the of plussing an attraction where it worked. I mean, I think the Haunted Mansion got plussed
marginally.
I think it's better now than it was.
Really?
I do.
You think the experience of the Haunted Mansion is better now than it was when it first opened? The first time you went on it. See, I don't agree with that. I think it's different.
It's definitely different, but I mean, I like the attic scene with the bride.
It's nice.
I like the staircase. I like the new thing at the end with the ghosts pulling your heads off and stuff like that.
Okay,
you know, I like the queue. I even like the queue itself, although it's definitely skippable. Do it once or twice, but that's fine.
Okay.
I think overall, the Haunted Mansion's better than it was.
Okay, name me another one.
I think Pirates is better than it was.
I don't agree with that at all.
See, I like the Sparrow. I do. I like Jack Sparrow. I thought those animatronics were just stunning.
I think they're fine animatronics. I think it added nothing to the experience. Absolutely nothing. I think it just added a person that distracts most people who only know him from the rest of the story that was being presented. And it was a good one. It was one of the best ones ever.
Okay.
And instead, now people who don't experience that thing that Walt and his guys wanted to put together, which was timeless in my mind. And instead, we look at Captain Jack Sparrow.
I don't mind that at all.
I don't like. And it took all the humor out of it. It took all the fun out of it. And now it's like another Captain Jack Sparrow thing. And I can go down the list from the Living Seas to Spaceship Earth to Test Track. I can keep going down to everyone's a favorite, Imagination. We could go through tons of them, right? And they're all in the negative. You've named a couple. And
Star Tours?
Like I said, I get sweaty palms.
I think Star Tours is better.
I guess. It didn't really make much of a difference other than maybe a little bit more re-rideability. But I thought it wasn't my favorite ride to begin with.
Q's better. The ride's better.
Q's marginally better. But the queue was pretty good to start with.
The queue was pretty good to start with.
I don't mind changes. See, what you're talking about are sideways changes, right? I'm talking about when they redo something, when they pull something out and put something back in, and they call it plussing. That's not what we're doing here. And that's
different. So what you're talking about is Mission Space better than Horizons.
Exactly. Or the new Test Track compared to the old one. It's not just an overlay. It's not just a fix of a little scene here and there or an add of a character or something like that. It's a complete redo.
See, when you say plussing an attraction, I think of just the little thing here and there. Like
they call that plussing.
Or, you know, changing the queue at Big Thunder or whatever.
No, if the attraction keeps the name, they call it plussing.
Right.
If it changes the name, then obviously they've blown up the building. When...
So that's not Horizons.
Horizons is a bad example. Yeah, no, Horizons is a bad example. Test Track is more. Spaceship Earth is more of an example of what I'm saying. I just don't think they do it very well. And I'm starting to worry about how these things are changing and what's being done. And it's, you know, I'm not 100% on board here, and I need to be sort of convinced.
Right.
Anyway, I've gone on too long about it. Is that all for the news?
That is all for the news.
I'm gonna have my Twitter explode over this. So let me stop now. We're going to take a break, come back as we take go through our feature section on the backstory of Harambe. Back right after this. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book or even every quote you request means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jumbo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to jomboeveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Welcome back to Radio Harambe. We are all calmed down. The steam has subsided from out of our ears, and we are ready to discuss now one of our favorite things.
Speak for yourself. I'm still annoyed about the Vikings.
Well, maybe we can calm you down as we make our way into Harambe here. That's always a panacea for all my for all that ails me. So we're going to discuss the backstory and the history of Harambe. Harambe is the mythical port town in East Africa that makes up the Africa section of Disney's Animal Kingdom. In the mid-1990s, just to go back a little bit, after getting the go-ahead to begin the design phase of the park, Joe Rohde and his team of Imagineers headed to East Africa, specifically Kenya and Tanzania, for inspiration and ideas. And not just for the attractions and zoological exhibits, but also for the general immersive surroundings and details that you find as you walk throughout Harambe. From his time working on the Epcot World Showcase pavilions for Norway and Mexico, Rohde learned the value of research and authenticity in these kind of projects, which we just discussed. And in Harambe, he and his team created what I think both Mike and I would consider to be, essentially, the greatest World Showcase pavilion of them all, the very pinnacle of that concept.
I agree 100%.
Before we talk about Harambe specifically, let me back up a bit, and we'll talk a little bit about the countries of Kenya and Tanzania, the places the Imagineers visited for inspiration. Both countries contain some of Africa's most popular tourist destinations. Their natural beauty and wildlife bring people from across the globe for bucket list style safaris. Kenya is home to Lake Victoria, the second largest freshwater lake in the world. It includes the spectacular national parks, ones called Amboseli, Mount Kenya, and Tanzania attracts visitors with sites such as the incredible coastal island of Zanzibar, the world-renowned Serengeti National Park, which you hear about all over the place, and Mount Kilimanjaro, which at over 19,000 feet is the highest peak on the continent and is also known as the Roof of Africa. There is more than just natural beauty and amazing wildlife in the story of Kenya and Tanzania. East Africa is considered by most experts to be the very cradle of humanity, the place where our species originated. But its influence upon human civilization extends way beyond these prehistoric origins. This is one of those places on the globe where cultures and civilizations from around the world have left their influence and have also been influenced. Its location on the eastern shores of Africa made it a place frequented by, among others, Arab, Indian, and Chinese traders, many of whom became residents, and of course, by the middle of the last millennium, it became a focal point for European conquest and occupation, beginning with the Portuguese, specifically Vasco da Gama in 1498, Right up until Germany and Great Britain divided the area among themselves late in the 19th century, with the Germans laying claim to what's now Tanzania and the British control of Kenya. Through the 20th century, both countries struggled for their independence, oftentimes resulting in unspeakable violence. And in 1960, Great Britain announced it would hand over control of Kenya to democratically elected government. And in 1963, the Germans pulled up stakes and left Tanzania for good. Both countries have faced the kind of struggles one would expect in such circumstances, but they are both moving forward. The natural beauty, culture, and people of Tanzania and Kenya certainly enchanted Imagineers. There's no doubt about that. And Rohde and his team fell in love, and you can feel that love around you, really, when you walk through Harambe. Now, folks, It is time to pass through the giant wooden gate, which is one of my favorite pieces of art in all of Disney World. Cross the river on an ancient-looking bridge and enter Harambe, the port of East Africa. So let's talk a bit about Harambe's backstory, Mike. We'll hand it over to you.
All right, sure. The town of Harambe itself was built in 1420. You might ask how I know that, and there's actually a sign stating that behind the Tamu Tamu. There's a little sign that says that it was built in 1420. It was obviously a colonial, taken over as part of a colony in the 1500s. They don't actually tell you what colonial power controlled Harambe, but you can see in different areas kind of references to different potential colonial powers that took over, that operated it. There is the Safari Orientation Center, which is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E, which is in the Tusker House, and that's obviously a reference to Great Britain.
Right.
There's actually a British phone, too, that demonstrates or tries to demonstrate that this was a British colonial power. There's actually there's also Portuguese influence in some of the design of the fort itself, sort of on the outskirts there. There's the turret with a cannon, which was there, and I don't know if it's going to be there still when all of Harambe is redone for Festival of the Lion King. But that was very Portuguese in its style. So it's hard to they don't actually come out and tell you what colonial power, but in like many of these places, maybe it changed hands over the course of time.
Well, certainly in that section of Africa, the British would have taken over for the Portuguese influence. So you would certainly have, if it were in Kenya, you would certainly have both influences still there.
Right, right. Well, anyway, so the town became a colony in the 1500s, and then it gained its own independence in 1961. And again, there was a bench. It was a simple stone bench that was located over by the water. Well, by the turret, I should say. And apparently that is gone now. It actually had the word Uhura, U-H-U-R-U, and then the word 1961. And that simply meant freedom, 1961. So that was an indication as to when the country of Harambe gained its independence. There are other references to the year 1961 and pillars and things like that. So that is when it became independent. And it has since grown to, where you're walking in is Old Harambe, which is the old colonial area. There is supposed to be a town up the road, which is called, it's S-O-K-O-N-I. I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but I guess it's Sokoni. You are walking along Old Sokoni Road, and that leads you to New Harambe, which is supposed to be this, you know, metropolis. But this is sort of the old section, the old colonial section, and it's for tourists, and it's where you gather before you begin your various safaris,
right,
which we'll get to in a few minutes.
Now, before we go on, just a few things I want to throw out as, you know, from what you said
there.
That first of all, that idea of the old town and the new town is very much something that exists throughout that section of Africa. Almost all of the, especially even in the bigger cities like Mombasa and, the places that you see a lot of photographs from, they all have kind of old colonial towns that are heavily influenced architecturally by the Portuguese time in there up until the mid 19th century. And then, of course, by the British. Or the German, depending on what country you're in. And then there are other countries that have had different influence, Dutch influence and things like that go throughout up until the 20th century. 1961, though, really makes me believe that their historical inspiration is Kenya. And it certainly seems from what you've said there that this is where we're doing. We're zeroing in. If we're trying to locate Harambe in a map, it sounds like we're going to find it somewhere in Kenya because we have the British influence in some of the writing, and we have that date, which certainly corresponds with Kenya's independence. So just wanted to throw those in. Go ahead. Keep going.
Right. Well, around Harambe itself is the river. So the river you actually cross to get into Harambe is the – I'm going to butcher this word, I'm sure.
Yeah. I can't believe you're even going for it.
Uzumbuzi River. Umbuzi, and that actually translates, it's a Swahili word that translates into discovery. And of course, as everybody knows, the Discovered River is what goes around the Tree of Life. So it's just another reference to the Discovery River. I know the Imagineers themselves, there's an island off of Kenya, which the name escapes me at the moment, where you know a lot of the influence of the design of Harambe comes from. So it is an old port located off the coast, and you know a lot of that is found in Harambe itself. And there's some interesting little features. Do you want to start taking a tour through Harambe?
Yeah, an island off the coast that is Kenyan.
Wasn't it Kenyan?
What
is it thinking of?
Well, the only islands that come to my mind are obviously Zanzibar, which is Tanzanian.
Maybe it was Zanzibar. It might have been Zanzibar.
There's
actually
Pemba Island, which yep. I think is also, which I read a lot about that one. I'm just trying to think if there's any ones, because the capital of Kenya is Nairobi, which is inland, and the other big yes. town is Mombasa.
Right.
Is there an island that makes up part of Mombasa? I don't know. Got me. You got me on that one. I thought I learned everything I needed to know here, but I guess not. Okay. Because maybe the old town of Mombasa is because there is old town sections of Mombasa, which I've when I was doing research for some of the blog postings we did on this, you see a lot of pictures from there that really do have an old town, the old Harambe feel to it. I don't know if that island itself has a separate name from the city, cause maybe the city expands beyond just the island. So that's possible, but that you see a lot of things there, like the old railway stations in Mombasa and all that kind of stuff. So it's a really neat place to see pictures of, and you really see the thread there between the two.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So we've come to the conclusion that this is Kenyan, which I'm happy we did that. Let's start walking around.
Okay. So the first thing is, as I talked about before, you cross the river, which is, I'm not going to try to pronounce it again, but it means the Discovery River, and you enter. Oh, you know, it just dawned on me what the island is.
Yeah.
It's the town of Lamu, Lamu, which is one of the oldest Swahili towns off the coast of Kenya. I'm looking at a website right now.
Oh yeah. Okay.
That's what I was trying to think of, and I couldn't think of it.
Okay.
All right, anyway, so they spent a lot of time in Lamu as the, I guess that's how you pronounce it, as the focal point of sort of the look and feel of Harambe. And you do cross over the Discovery River to get into Harambe. And when you do, you will see stone pillar that says 1961 and all that kind of stuff. But you also see these white bricks on the ground. So take a look at the white bricks as you're walking by. And most people don't even, know what these are. But what it is... The Imagineers decided that this town was at one point a fort, and essentially it was an old trading stop between the Middle East and other parts of Africa where they would trade ivory and spices and things like that. And it was a fort designed to protect this trading outpost from pirates along the river and all that kind of stuff. So what you're crossing there at those white markers is the wall where the fort once extended out to, and it has since crumbled away and gone away. And there's other references to the fort in other parts of Harambe. But it's interesting to note these white bricks that I would have to say 99.7% of the people that walk by don't even notice that they're white bricks that they're walking over. And they certainly have no clue. There's no indication as to what they are or anything of that sort. But it was a little homage by the Imagineers to sort of give you a feel for this backstory of what Harambe was, which was a fort along the trading post, trading spices and ivory and things like that.
There are some fantastic examples of old Portuguese forts in and around, especially if I'm not mistaken, in and around Zanzibar. And I think there may be one in particular where when you see it, and there's definitely a couple in Kenya as well, since that whole section really had a very Portuguese influence throughout the time. There's one called Fort Jesus in Mombasa. Oh. Mm-hmm. That is one of the forts that when you see a picture of, you know exactly what they were going for there. Because you know, most of those ports were fortified, like you said, from protection from pirates or any kind of invasion, because there was a lot of different, you know, people coming through there. So you really see an amazing thread between what really existed and what's there now. And it's the level of authenticity in the architecture here is staggering in some spots. I mean, just staggering. They're incredibly beautiful.
And you get the sense from the design of the fort itself, which is Portuguese, as you said. So that gives you a clue that historically for Harambe, it was initially perhaps a Portuguese colony and eventually changed hands to British, because there's definitely British influences that are more modern. Some of the phrases used in the language, it's in the signs themselves, as well as the mailbox. The more modern touches are British. So you get the sense that it was Portuguese and then British later on in its history.
So yes, folks, when you see those words spelled that way, that really is there for a reason. It is amazing when you think about it.
It's amazing somebody actually thought to do that.
It is, but when you it isn't. It is from a perspective, you know, from of visiting a theme park. But when you think about what. You know, when you go to a place like Mombasa, you know, the melting pot of cultural influences in Mombasa and all up and down that area of the coast, the east coast of Africa, that must leave an impression on people, especially designers. Right. You know, you get into the mind of a designer. I mean, I'm sure they went home saying, oh, man, we got to remember the British part. We got to remember the British part. And make sure we get that in there, you know? So it is amazing. It really is.
Yep.
And so where from here? Where are we walking next?
Which way you want to go? You want to go to the right or you want to go to the left?
Let's go to the right.
All right. So when you first start off with is one of my favorite counter service restaurants, and that's the Tamu.
You're a big fan.
I like the Tamu. Yeah, it used to be an ice cream place, and then it was a burger joint, but now it serves fun, you know, things. But perhaps one of my favorite parts of the Tamu Tamu is the seating actually behind it. It's sort of tucked behind these doors, and you walk in there, and that's actually one of the last remaining vestiges of the old fort. There are crumbled walls, and you can actually take a look around. You'll see a couple of different things that will spark your thoughts there. One is there is scorch marks. On some of the walls. And that's because the fort sometime in the past burnt, and that's why much of it is gone today. It burned to the ground. There's also in the back of the area, so if you're going all the way towards the back, you'll notice that some of the carving or engravings, I guess, on the wall, the designs of the walls themselves are more ornate. And that's because that's where the commander of the fort lived, that you're in his room there. These little touches of Harambe are amazing, and most people just don't even notice it.
And tell the story of the actual East Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of those things you can relate to places that are really there. And that's that seating section, most people don't even know is there.
Yeah, you know, most people skip by it. But, you know, take a look and you'll see the scorch marks of the fire, and you'll see that plants are starting to. You'll see that they actually. It almost looks like, you know, this is 400 years old, and there are plants growing out of the walls like you would see in something that was actually 400 years old. It's really incredible.
Exactly. And then we move on. Are we going to skip the toilet?
Well, we don't have to. We can talk about the toilet if you want.
There's one of Jamie from the Disney Hipster's favorite places.
Well, you know, there is an interesting thing about it, because right there they have a sign about the Public Works Department.
Yeah.
And how they dedicated these public bathrooms. And
that's right.
And they were dedicated actually on September 10th, 1997. The toilet was actually the old Port Authority, but the Port Authority itself has moved to the new spacious digs in Newtown.
Good.
Of Harambe. And what you're left are these public toilets. But there's actually even, you know, it's incredibly, there's even a little bit of a backstory to the toilet. And they're actually an interesting toilet. I mean, one of the things... what's interesting, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, but if you go to any other theme park in Disney World, or any of the other three, you will see almost all the bathrooms, particularly men's rooms, don't have doors. They just have these things that you know, block the view so you can't see people going in.
Sure.
All the bathrooms in the Animal Kingdom are almost all of them have doors. Do you know why?
I don't know why.
Really? It's fascinating. It's so they can lock. What? I bet you don't know why they want them to lock.
Why do they want them to lock?
Because at the Animal Kingdom, when they built the zoo, they had to ensure that you can get people safely locked away in the event a tiger or a lion or something gets loose.
Get out of here.
So there is enough space in the Animal Kingdom where you can quickly, and you know they're spread throughout, quickly get people behind locked doors in the event of an escaped animal.
Holy schmoly!
So almost all the bathrooms, at least all the ones I can think of off the top of my head, lock and have doors.
Mike, I thought I knew every single little goofy detail when it comes to that stuff about the Animal Kingdom. I've been on tours, and no one has ever said that to me.
Yep.
That is fascinating.
It is, right?
There's no windows either.
Nope.
It's a tiger shelter.
Essentially.
Well, you know, Kenya is famous for having the Tsavo River, which is where a group of man-eating lions killed dozens of workers during the building of the railway. So,
the Ghost in the Darkness.
In the Ghost in the Darkness, yep. So the local have a little history with dealing with such a problem. So makes sense to me.
Yep. It's fascinating. Actually.
That's a great story.
Well, next to them are
next time you're in there, I want you to run into the bathroom, quickly lock the door, and scream that there's a man-eating
lion on the
line running through the anyway, go ahead, keep going.
All right, so after this you have the two stores. Great stores, Mombasa and Ziwani Traders. Now Mombasa, if you look at it, is a little bit more fancy than the Ziwani Traders. And Mombasa is actually where the colonial leader once lived. It was here where the governor, I should say, that was the word I was looking for, lived in colonial times. He has a very nice house, and it's a beautiful area. And this is the store for Mombasa Marketplace. And you will see that the store itself, there's a sign there that shows that it was initially erected in 1781 and then restored in 1992. And now it is being restored again by Majafari, M-J-A-F-A-R-I. And that's actually a nod to the architect, Ahmad Jafari, who was instrumental in designing the Animal Kingdom.
And in this building, you really see, first of all, like I was saying, that old town look. They use the word Mombasa specifically because if you look at pictures from old town Mombasa, you'll see where you see the thread here. And you also see the Arab influence here,
mm-hmm.
which is incredibly important in East African history. And one that, you know, influences all the cultural aspects of the food and everything. So we're not just talking European influence on these things, but there was also a heavy Arab influence, and you see it really well in that one piece of architecture there. Gorgeous piece of architecture.
Mm-hmm. Now, next to it is Ziwani Traders, and that is, well, that's sort of the kids' store in reality. That's actually the store sort of where you go to get all your supplies for your safari and stuff. And if you look around at all the designs and things like that, you'll see fishing gear, baskets, binoculars, boots. That's what occupies the sort of the decor above you and around you. Canned goods, things like that. Newspapers. It's actually interesting. If you look at the newspapers, you'll find one that says that the Harambe Stars, the soccer team, actually was playing Ghana in a big game coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But they have all these like little nods. And this is where, when you're on your way to a big safari, this is where you're going to stop to get your stuff.
Now, the Harambe Stars, if you add a, and I forgot to mention that I've always been, this always slips my mind. The Harambe Stars is the nickname of the Kenyan national football team. Add an extra E. They have, it's a Harambe with an extra E at the end. But the Harambe Stars is the actual nickname for Kenya's national soccer team.
Oh, interesting.
Just in case you wanted to know that. And Dewani Traders, the building itself, looks more like... how would you describe it? More like a... Like a... what's the word I'm looking for? Like a town... Like a marketplace kind of... that's the word I'm looking for. It's going right out of my head. You know, less permanent, you know? Kind of more of a temporary structure. It's you know, that kind of look. But it really, and again, an impressive building there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Alrighty.
So where do we go? Well, now you got in front of you, you have the entrance to Kilimanjaro Safaris, right?
Right, but that's for another day. But yes, yeah, that is one of the safaris that you can actually go. And maybe we could touch base here on all the little posters and things like that. Found throughout Harambe.
Everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere. And a lot of them reference different different safaris, such right. as Captain Bob's, such as the balloon tour and things like that. But one of them is the Kilimanjaro safari ride that the photo op
right.
that you're, you know, all the guests who are at Harambe are going to be taking.
And just to quickly throw a little thing in here, that there's, like I said, there's these posters everywhere, but they're so tastefully put there
mm-hmm.
that you hardly even notice them. You know, I mean, you have to kind of look around at all this stuff. If you just walk through, you're not going to see them all. I mean, you have to kind of stand over there and take a look at them. And some of them have some beautiful artwork in them. They're really gorgeous. I mean, I have pictures of hundreds of them. I've gone around taking pictures of walls in this place millions of times. So where are we going from here?
Well, one of the things about the safari is the Tusker House itself, which is really a great ensemble of different themes and different designs. The part of it, one of the rooms, is what I referred to before as the Safari Orientation Center.
Right.
And in there, you will see a big board that has all the different safaris that are available for you to take. Although obviously only two of them are in actuality you can take. But there's the, you know, the photo tour, the two-week photo tour for the Kilimanjaro. There's the walking tour to see the gorillas. And then there are a slew of other ones. You know, a hippo tour, you know, the Captain Bob's tour and stuff like that. And then you also see another sign that says, you know, who's going to be, you know, what tour guide's going to be taking what tour. And this is also where you have some other signs that say Swahili translations and things like that in that particular room. And then next to that is actually this open air market, which is where you get your buffet stations at the Tusker House. There are different little carts that are each buffet station. And around you, it actually looks like you are in an open air market, because above you are all these curtains and rugs and stuff that are blocking the sun from really pouring down on you. And above you can actually see these balconies. And here is where Joe Rohde's masks and beads are, which you'll actually see signs for. And, you know, Joe Rohde's beads and masks are there. There's also an homage to John Shields, who was an architect that helped design Harambe and all of the Animal Kingdom. There's a reference to him as one of the stores too that's selling shields and things like that.
Right.
So, excuse me, that is sort of the center area of the Tusker House.
In the Tusker House, we've gone over this on more than one occasion.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Like you said, it has all these things that relate to the safari itself. It's kind of considered the jumping off point. And the architecture behind it itself is also one of these old town, you know, what I would imagine be European influenced kind of structures, you know, of colonial European times at least. And it's incredible. I love the little spot, little sort of alcove thing in the tower. if I'm making mm-hmm. sense with that.
Right. Yeah.
I've been known to hide in there every once in a while. It's a really cool place, and again fits into the story here on this. So, do we want to continue our way to Dawa?
Sure, we can go to Dawa.
I guess that's next.
Sure, that's Dr. Dawa's.
That's right.
Dawa it translates to the word medicine, or strong medicine, I should say. Or medicine, which is another slang term for strong alcohol.
So, right.
Dr. Dawa, as he calls himself, owns and operates the bar there. We don't know exactly where it's going to go, or what's going to become of it, but as far as everything I know is the Dawa bar is going to remain. So I'm assuming the theming will remain as well. He was right here. He catered to the safari guides and, you know, some of the other tourists. He also caters to beachgoers. It was an interesting sign, and I don't know if it's going to make the cut, as they say, with the changes to Harambe. But there was a sign that basically said, you know, the beachgoers, I guess the river down where you used to be able to go was a popular beach place. And there is a sign saying, you know, beware of the dangers of the currents. And apparently the water is getting, you know, more rapids. Right. And, you know, it's too dangerous to swim anymore. But there's still that sign telling you not to. So the river itself is just used for fishermen and traders now.
Yeah, you know, it's the one part of the theming that is, you know, that could use a little enhancement is the idea of it being a port, in quotes. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always kind of had this feeling when they started to say they're going to expand Harambe that maybe they would use that waterway down there to sort of expand that theme. Because I do think some people do forget that we're going into what is essentially a coastal town, because it isn't laid out that way. It kind of feels more like a, you know, when you're in it and you're surrounded by all the trees and the safaris right there and the train and this kind of thing. It feels more like, you know, something in the jungle or something like that. You know, or you know, certainly something in the off into a national park,
right?
Rather so than in a port. So these little references do kind of bring you back to that idea, and they do need to do that occasionally, because if you don't go and take that time to go out to that part you were talking about where the cannon is, mm-hmm. that's the one section by the Dawa where you really feel the kind of old port right. history to it. And if that goes away, man, that will really be a shame.
That would be a shame. And, you know, some of the other things around the Tusker House, that's actually right there is Hotel Barutica. Which translates to be refreshed, with the word Barutica means be refreshed. And you can actually hear sometimes, if you look up above the Tusker House, you'll see, you know, sometimes there's like towels hanging out and it looks like an old radio.
Right.
And, you know, this is one of the hotels where a lot of younger people stayed, and they would party up on the roof. And sometimes you can actually hear that they have a soundtrack up there of like music going softly and, you know, people talking in Swahili and stuff like that. To add to the ambiance of the area, they made this sort of rooftop lounge up there.
Yeah, I love that. It's a really cool spot, and it, you can see it really well when you're coming over the bridge.
Right.
Have we reached the end?
I think so. I think that's pretty good, right?
I think we got it. I mean, we didn't want to give, you know, there's more to it in the attractions and things like that, so we'll get to it, you know, at a different time, but the next time you go into Harambe, we hope you have a little bit more of a appreciation of really how spectacular it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess we've done it.
Good.
That is the history of Harambe. Thank you once again for listening to Radio Harambe. For more information on the Animal Kingdom, please stop by and visit us at our website, jomboeveryone.com. You'll find everything there is to know about the Animal Kingdom, including reviews of attractions, shows, restaurants, loads of photo galleries, lots of information about animals and conservation as well. Also, you can find us on Twitter. I am at Radio Harambe. Safari Mike is at jomboeveryone. We're also on Facebook and YouTube. All those links can be found at jomboeveryone.com. And I would imagine in the next few weeks, we will be adding certainly some more to both the photo galleries and the YouTube page. Don't forget about our conservation store. I just received my new Not a Half Day Park t-shirts. Just came in the mail, and I plan on wearing them at the Animal Kingdom often. I guess I'm going to have to figure a way to wash them. or not go on Cali River Rapids. They look great. We donate half the profits to our conservation partners. The other half goes really to keep this show and all of our content going. Go to Zazzle.com/JomboEveryone. Also, please subscribe to the show on iTunes. Rate us. Leave a review there as well. It does help to get the word out on us. You can also listen to us on Stitcher and on Podbean. So for Safari Mike, I am Dave McBride. Kwa Harini, go well. And thank you once again for listening to Radio Harambe. I'm here.
Tumbumbu, na utupuku.